Hello, human beings. Welcome back to The Great Everything on this 12th of March. It's Patrick with a little update from Rome, where it's currently pissing down rain, but where at least they haven't taken an hour of time from us. Which is something that throughout most of yesterday was baffling me, because, full disclosure, the night before, on Saturday night, I went to a techno gig by this pretty amazing DJ from Berlin called Ellen Alien. She's a bit of a legend in the techno world, so some of you audiophiles might be familiar with her. But the fact is, although it was a great set, it ended at about 5 a.m., and I'm way too old for this shit, so yesterday was not a good day for me. I went through it in a kind of foggy haze. And in that foggy haze, I was on my social media, and I was seeing all these tweets from angry Americans outraged at something that had been done to time itself. The fabric of time was in jeopardy. At some point, I came across a tweet by Abby Norman over at Let Me Google That. She'd done a show on daylight saving. And in my addled state, my first thought was, why does daylight need saving? What's wrong with daylight? And then I went over to my Facebook, and all my American friends were so pissed about, they've stolen an hour of our time, give back that hour. And my next thought was the current storyline in DC Comics. Yeah, I know, I'm a nerd, so what? In DC Comics, there's now a storyline called Rebirth, where Dr. Manhattan, who you might remember from Watchmen, he's reached into the DC universe and he's stolen 10 years of time from our heroes, thus weakening them for some reason. Anyway, that's what came up into my mind. Then I realized what had happened and I was like, oh, well, this is far more prosaic than any of that. Time itself is not in jeopardy. Or at least that's what they want us to think. Anyway, today we are going to be talking about Bishop Berkeley, the English philosopher from the Enlightenment period, late 1600s, who is closely associated with immaterialism or subjective idealism. Broadly speaking, the notion that the world is an illusion, the materiality of it is an illusion, and that it's all just mind, whether it's our mind or God's mind, that's something to be discussed. But the fact is, matter doesn't exist. It's all just in our heads, which is a strand of thinking which is close in a way to some of the current ideas about how we're all in a simulation, which have been gaining some currency in our time. I don't think that's true, but you know, why not? It's not impossible. You couldn't disprove it. But also to some earlier thinkers from the from various Asian traditions, such as Buddhism. You have Nagarjuna, very great, great Indian philosopher from around the 2nd or 3rd century AD, who also believed that life was all just an illusion. It was just in our heads and nowhere else. But also various other types of Hinduism, Veil of Maya, this whole idea that the material world is just something that we believe we live in, but is actually just a construct of our minds or of some higher being's mind. It's a very interesting way of thinking. And so because Bishop Berkeley was born today, in sometime in 1680, I think we should be talking about that. So I'll be sharing a conversation I had about Berkeley about a year ago with some of you guys on Anchor. And if you have any contributions, please feel free to call in, let me know your thoughts, ask questions, and we can chat. I also want to do a little bit of housekeeping here. So last night I had a lovely conversation with my pals Dean Riche over at Medicine Remixed, a great podcast here on Anchor, which you should definitely check out if you don't already. But I think you do, because our audiences are slightly overlapping. You might remember that I'm in the process of setting up a series of interviews with interesting people to try and understand more about life philosophy from the lived experience of other human beings who I find interesting. And because Medicine Remixed have a similar life project to my own, and because they have a similar origin story, you know, these are doctors, respected professionals, similarly to how I was a supposedly respected corporate lawyer, who are transitioning into something more creative, or rather more meaningful to them, which just happens to be creative. And we like much of the same things. We are interested in self-improvement and motivation and psychology and philosophy and just finding the meaning of life. So because we get on so well, I think it's going to be a great conversation. We are talking about a few different things, also podcasting, trying to be a creative in a saturated world for these kind of things, but also, you know, talking about our experience being quote-unquote successful podcasters, at least on the Anchor platform. So there'll be an interesting conversation that I'll be sharing with you at some point this week. But because I'll be having the full interview with them tomorrow, if you have anything that you'd like me to ask, or anything that you'd like them to ask me, or any topic that you think we should cover, please feel free to let me or them know, but probably me, because I'll be conducting the sort of interview. It'll be more like a conversation, really. Do let me know beforehand so we can be sure to cover anything you want to listen to. So if there's anything like that that you're interested in, let us know. Also, if there's anyone you think I should be speaking to, let me know. And I'll continue to keep these kind of conversations up. Other than that, enjoy the show, enjoy the musical interludes, which were recorded while I was totally fucked out of my mind on Saturday night listening to Ellen Alien. And if you enjoy electronica, I'm sure you'll love that. But if you're a normal human being, well, I'm very sorry for subjecting your ears to the techno stylings of Ellen Alien. Catch you in a bit. Hello, all you people who do not exist other than in my perceptions of you. It's the 12th of March, and I'm here to tell you today that it's all in your head. Or as that bald kid in The Matrix would say, there is no spoon. Why am I telling you this? Well, because today in 1685 was the birthday of the philosopher Bishop George Berkeley, whose central idea is that objects don't exist in the real world. There is no such thing as matter, and that everything is just in our mind.
Far out, man.
The thing about Berkeley is that although his ideas seem crazy on an intuitive level, he's incredibly respected not just by philosophers, but by physicists and other scientists as well. Because his idea that esse est percepi, which is Latin for to be is to be perceived, is very similar to what early quantum theorists were saying with their idea that observation determines outcome. You must have heard of the uncertainty principle with the thought experiment of the cat in the box, where it's both alive and dead at the same time, existing in a state of quantum uncertainty until you observe the cat and can therefore determine whether it's alive or dead. That's very similar to Berkeley's notion that it's all about perception. Things do not really exist until they are perceived. So what does Berkeley actually believe? Philosophers before him, like John Locke, said that in the outside world there are certain objects, and objects are basically just bundles of qualities. Some qualities which exist independently of us, like an object's mass, its weight, its size, and some qualities that depend on us observing the object, like its color, its taste, its sound. Berkeley says that all qualities are just in the mind. All qualities of an object depend on observation. Try imagining something existing independent of any observation. You can't. Because as soon as you imagine the object, you're imagining its qualities, its properties. Try with an apple. Try and imagine an apple without any size. You can't. You're just imagining a very small apple. Try imagining an apple without a color. You can't. You're just imagining one that's black and white, or gray, or transparent. Try and imagine an apple that doesn't have any taste. You can't. You're just imagining an apple that tastes like the air or water. Berkeley says that this tells us something, and that is that if an object is just made up of its qualities, and if qualities all depend on an observer, without an observer, that thing doesn't have qualities. And without qualities, a thing doesn't exist. Things cannot exist independent of an observer. To be is to be perceived. This is a fascinating yet trippy way of looking at the world. Because of course, if properties only exist in our head, then there really is no physical world distinct from us. There's nothing out there. The whole world is just our ideas. So when I look away from this computer screen, it stops existing. Because the qualities the computer needs for it to exist stop existing the moment my mind is turned elsewhere. So, to sum that up, an object is just its qualities, and qualities are all relative to an observer. They exist because there is an observer. So without the observer, there are no qualities, and without qualities, there is no object. The whole world is just our ideas. central idea of the philosopher Bishop George Berkeley, whose birthday was today in 1685, I think, is that there is no physical world beyond us. The world is actually just ideas in our head, and that we all perceive things, and only when we perceive them do they actually exist, because existence itself is our perceptions, it's our ideas. This is why it's called idealism. The whole world is just ideas. There is no matter. There is no physical reality. One famous refutation of this thesis was by Samuel Johnson, who kicked a stone until his foot rebounded off the stone and said, "I refute it thus." My question to you, very dear listeners, is, do you think this is a valid refutation of Berkeley's point? Do you think that by kicking the stone, by saying, well, it's there, Samuel Johnson has shown that there is a physical reality? I don't think he has. No, I'm not necessarily agreeing with Berkeley, although I do in many ways. But I think that within Berkeley's idea, he could very well argue that, well, no, because you see yourself as kicking the stone, but the fact is, what you kicking the stone is just a bundle of sense data that you are experiencing. You are experiencing your foot rebounding. You are experiencing the rock. It's all like you have a virtual reality that you're inside. And inside that virtual reality, yes, you are kicking a rock. But that doesn't show that there is a physical rock beyond your experience of it. I know that that sounds like sophistry, but I don't think it is, and I'd like to know your thoughts. Do you have an idea? And in the next segment, I'm going to wonder, okay, if Berkeley is right and there is no physical reality beyond the senses, why is it that all of us seem to experience the same things?
I definitely do not think that that is a good argument against the philosophy, though I think in some ways it does represent what the average person sees philosophy as, people arguing over invisible abstract concepts when they would rather just kick a rock and say, but the rock is there. If you're going to argue Berkeley's philosophy, I think that you have to argue the fact that it is predicated at its core in the belief that human perception is limitless. That because we cannot imagine an apple without taste or shape, that means that the apple does not actually have taste or shape, when in fact it may just mean that we have limitations of the human mind, that we cannot perceive those things because we simply are not capable. They are beyond us.
I think that you make a very valid point. I agree that just because we can't imagine something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. However, I do think that your very valid point is made against the weakest version of Berkeley's own argument. To be fair though, I mean, that is the argument that Berkeley himself makes, the weakest version, because we shouldn't forget that he's writing in the late 17th, early 18th century, and that therefore he doesn't have the philosophical, scientific, conceptual, or linguistic sophistication that we have. Today, we can make far stronger versions of Berkeley's own argument. So the way I would rephrase Berkeley, that I'm not sure your argument works against, is this. Everything exists relative to something else. We don't necessarily have to call it an observer or something that perceives it. But without relativity, nothing can exist in the physical world. Because what is an object without qualities that it uses to interact with other things that are not it? Can we really imagine anything existing without something relative to which it exists, even if that something else is just the space around it? For something to be, capital B, to really exist, surely there needs to be something else which it is not, for it to be able to say, I am this. Or for someone else to be able to say, that is that. Do you see the point? Relativity is a fundamental block of physical existence. And in that sense, I don't think we can say that it is possible to imagine something that is not existing relative to something else. unless we want to invoke God, which is of course what Berkeley himself does. Now, we wouldn't call it God, we would call it the absolute, the objective, the entire universe. But Berkeley's argument, I think, stands firm, and it is that for something to exist, it has to exist relative to something else. Even if it were the only object in existence, there would have to be some kind of space around it, some plane in which it operates, that it is not, or rather, that is not it. Bit of a mind fuck there.
Hey Patrick, thank you for sharing this information with us. I find it very fascinating, and I intend to believe Berkeley more and more. And as answer to your question, how it is possible that we're all experiencing the same thing? Could it be because some people say we are all one, we are all connected?
If in the philosopher George Berkeley's view, there is no such thing as physical reality beyond our perceptions, and that the whole world is nothing but our ideas, our perceptions of the world, how is it possible that we all seem to be having the same perceptions? How come, if everything is just an illusion, we're all sharing the same illusion? One way to answer that, I guess, and it's not Berkeley's way, is the solipsist view, which is the one according to which you are the only person who exists and everything's just in your head. So yeah, when you point at an apple, other people know what you mean because you're making those people up. Those people are also in your head. It's kind of like in a dream where everyone else is also made up by you. It doesn't really matter. They're not actually reacting to the apple that you're pointing at. They are just a part of figments of your imagination. But that's not Berkeley's approach. What Berkeley says is that ultimately we're all sharing in this ideal world. And by ideal, I mean that it's made up of ideas rather than matter. But the reason we're all seeing the same things is that there is a benchmark, an ultimate referee, a guarantor for all of our ideas matching up between themselves. And that is God. See, George Berkeley is actually Bishop George Berkeley, a very, very religious man, a bishop. It's not a surprise that he should refer to God as the ultimate arbiter, the ultimate guarantor for all of existence and our experiences matching up. So God, in a way, is the objective reality within which we all live. We're all sharing in this virtual reality, this illusion, within the ocean that is God. And God is the referee who makes sure that the playing field is the same for all of us, and that when I see an apple, it's the same apple you're seeing. In a way, Sylvia is right. According to Bishop George Berkeley, we are all connected by the one supreme being, the ultimate absolute objective being that is God.
Hey Patrick, it's a very nice question that you asked, and it's quite puzzling, so I would like to try to answer it. Whether it is possible to perceive the same things in the same way if there does not exist such thing as matter and they're all ideas. So in my view, it would be that we can never know if I perceive something in the same way as the person right in front of me. So in a way that when I see color, it's a simple example, where I see color, red, I may never know that the next person also sees red the same way as I do, because we can never verify it, we can never test it. So in a way, we may see the different things, but we may label them in the same way. So it becomes that we do not perceive things in the same way, but we label them and come to an understanding. So we can never know if the person right in front of us perceives the world the way in the same way as we do, but we seem to come to an understanding.
No, I think that's spot on. There is absolutely no way of knowing whether we perceive things the same way. In fact, it's highly likely that we don't. If I point at a red apple and you see that apple, there is no way of knowing whether my experience of the redness, the color, the shape of the apple is the same as your subjective experience of that apple. Whether it's because we experience entirely different things, or maybe the shade of red as we experience it is slightly different from each other's. But the thing is, with Berkeley, one thing is indubitable, and that is that we are both reacting to something. Sure, maybe the apple that I'm pointing at doesn't seem the same shade of red to you as it does to me, but it is undeniable that we are both seeing an apple. Or maybe you see it of a slightly different shape, maybe you think it's a pear, but the fact is we are both reacting to something. And if Berkeley is right, that there is no material, objective, physical world beyond our senses, and it's all just an idea in our head, then how is it that we all seem to be reacting to the same things? How is it that we are sharing this virtual reality? That's his question, and I guess his answer is God. Thanks for your call in, you know, that's a very good point. Everyone, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Great Everything. It's a bit of a shorter one, and what you might call a rerun had you been around a year ago on the Anchor 2.0 to hear the original conversation. So, just as a reminder, if you do have any questions for me or for Medicine Remix or any topic that you'd like me to bring up in our conversation that's going to take place tomorrow, and that's going to become a big episode of the podcast and our interview series this week, please let me know, get in touch. You can do that, the best way I think, is by downloading the Anchor app, in case you're not already on it, and calling into the station. And there's a chance that your call-in will be a part of the show. Or you can get in touch with me on the usual social media platforms. Speaking of which, this is something that I keep getting reminded that I need to be doing more of, and it's something that I actually discussed with the guys at Medicine Remix last night when we were talking about growing our platform. I need to be doing this, is reminding you to support The Great Everything, and there's a few different ways you can do that, should you be so inclined. The main one, I think, is perhaps leaving a review or a star, or no, not one star, five stars, of course, on the platform where you listen to The Great Everything, whether that's Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google, Stitcher, Pocket, whatever the hell. Anchor. I don't think you can leave ratings on Anchor, but the point is to express some love. It is something that goes a great deal in terms of helping me out. But also, do add me on the social media stuff. It's Facebook, The Great Everything. On Twitter, it's at TGE Blog. On Instagram, it's also The Great Everything. I'm on all these different places, so if you add me, that will be great, because you see, there's something that I'm actually having some trouble with. It's probably due to the fact that I'm technologically impaired and I'm not a great self-marketer, is the fact that I have a pretty consistent audience on the, as far as the podcast is concerned. I've got a lot of listeners. However, I have very few followers on Twitter and all those other platforms. And I, for the life of me, can't understand why. It's clearly something that I'm doing wrong. But if you can help me out in that respect, including by giving feedback, that would be deeply appreciated. Anyway, thank you again for your attention and your ears, and I'll catch you soon on The Great Everything. Until then, arrivederci.